Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview.
So, thank you for joining us, Norman. I wondered if you could start by just explaining a little bit about who you are, what you do, and kind of what your expertise is when it comes to smell and taste.
Yes, very good. I'm Norman Mazel. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm aged 47. I'm working in the coffee business since almost 13 years. And the last 7 years, I've been specialized in coffee tasting professionally. And I've been certified officially to do this the last since 2015. So I've been trained by the Coffee Quality Institute twice. First for the one variety of one species of coffee called Arabica, and then a year later for the other species, the two main species, Robusta. So I'm a professional coffee taster working at a coffee roastery since last year March, just before the pandemic hit us. And prior to that, I was the coffee taster for a green coffee trader.
So I don't know if you could give us a bit of a sense of how you use your senses when you're kind of tasting and grading coffee. How does that process work?
Yeah, when we are checking the quality of coffee, this is a big how shall I say this? This is quite a big operation to test one coffee on quality. So when it arrives, the coffee is in a raw green state. Then already the sensorical checks will start. At first, visually, so we're going to grade the coffee and check it for visual defects and other peculiar things. Hopefully, they are not in there. Then we're going to do some checks with devices for moisture. Afterwards, I'm going to roast the coffee samples. This is more like also an audio-visual setup. So it depends on time, of course, but also on the change of color. And the coffee will give you a certain audio auditive moments. Mm. To give you a clue when the time is right to stop the roasting. There's also some smell involved in this process, but this is not the main guide in this process. Then afterwards, we're going to prepare the samples, the cupping, as it is called, through a specific procedure, which is a worldwide procedure. Related to a certain amount of coffee grinds ground on a specific setting, put into vessels with the right ratio of water at the correct temperature. Then after some minutes, when the coffee is poured into the cupping bowls, as they are called, we're going to start the official sensorical organoleptic procedure. By, as it is called, breaking the crust on the cupping bowl. We do this with a spoon, a specific cupping spoon, and we put our nose almost into the coffee, just a little bit above this crust. When you break this crust, then the aromas get released, which are just under the surface of this crust that closes the beverage, so to speak. And then a system of 10 categories will be written on a specific form. So this will start with the aroma detection, and afterwards, along the whole cupping, we're gonna assess the coffee on specific characteristics like the flavor, the body of the coffee, the acidity, the aftertaste, the balance. These categories compile. Then there is a uniformity in all the coffees. If it's the taste is clean, if it has proper coffee taste. And then a final cupper's score. This is a hedonic score. So some of these categories are mostly aimed at the taste. So if the bitterness or the body, the mouth feel, the acidity, but the flavor and the aroma, of course, are more for the nose, for the smelling.
And it's fascinating because I've never really heard, I mean, you did a really good job, I think, of describing the whole process, and I've never heard it described in its entirety. And, you know, it's interesting that it does actually involve all of the senses, even the kind of, even sound to a certain extent.
Right? Sound in the roasting process. Perhaps the only thing, well, now I'm thinking of it, there's even some touch involved, because in the first stage, when the coffee is raw, you're also gonna, not always, but if you detect something like when the beans are too whitish, or you measure that the coffee has too much moisture, then you can do a test with your touch and let the beans when you from a little height pour them into a tray, and also well, of course, feel the beans. If they are soft, which would be a bad sign, if they are softish. And also, while you pour them in a tray, pay attention to the sound, because there's a peculiar difference when beans are, well, let's say the raw beans have to be around 11% containing moisture. But if they are, let's say, 14 or 15%, so not even that much more, then they make another sound. They are more... they make a more dense sound, not crisp and fresh. So, yeah, almost all senses are involved. And by putting all these details into this form, this is also a unified form which everybody uses, although some companies have some of their own forms, but all are based on this main form from this coffee institute, and it ends up with a score. So as much people know about wine, you end up with a score, and this is on a scale of 0 to 100, and if it's above 80, then it's called specialty coffee.
Okay, so thinking then about what happened during the pandemic, you know, I don't know if you want to just talk a bit about how your experience of grading coffee changed, partly as a result of kind of what you went through during the pandemic.
Yeah, well, when I contracted the virus, I lost both my smell and taste. Luckily, my taste returned quite fast, relatively, as I can say now. So after 2 weeks, I could detect the salt, sour, bitter, umami, and sweet on my tongue again, which has probably made me specialize more into this segment of tasting, because this has been my only clue, my only guide for the last 12 months. So it was devastating when I lost it, of course, also for my employer. Luckily, I could guide myself and others with my taste. And one plus, if I would go back in time and I wouldn't I would be just at the start of my tasting career, then I wouldn't have built up experience as I have now. Mm-hmm. So when you do a cup tasting, you are preferably not on your own, because you could have a bad day, have slept not good, or well, whatever. You could have a bad day, and it will affect your senses. The reason that, for this, that you can do it alone, is this could affect your scoring, and it will have an impact. So if you cup a sample, it can represent a coffee contract of about 20,000 kilos. Mm. So if you have a bad day and you reject this coffee on a false basis, it might have some impact for a lot of people. So then we do it with a team, 2, 3, 4 people. And the last year, I could use my taste, of course. And what also helped, well, me and also the others, is they would. I was the most experienced taster. Well, I still am, but I'm not fully active, so to speak. Mm. But the others could interpret what they are telling me when they were tasting. So it's almost like I'm blind in my smell capacity, and they will tell me what they taste and smell, of course, and I could interpret if it's correctly fitting the coffee which is on the cupping table. So we would have several different as I explained, there are two main species, but in those species you have, they're coming from, let's say, 30 types of origins. Mm. And then there are even sub varieties in these species. So I could interpret what they were telling me about coffees from Brazil or Nicaragua or Ethiopia. And based on my experience, I could understand or question them again about the things they were noting, if they were, in my opinion, not really in line with how the coffee should be tasting.
Mm. That's really interesting. So yeah. It's depended on your kind of interaction with others even more, I think, than you did previously.
Yeah, they are almost like my guide dog when you're blind. Yeah. So yeah, I'm sort of blind for tasting. But although the taste for the tongue is still doing very well, and I think I'm even gotten better at it. Mm. In this respect, I'm also looking forward to my third participation in the Dutch Cup Tasters Championship, which is a competition where it's not so much about what do you taste or what specific aromas do you get in a coffee, but what's the difference in taste? So is there a difference in bitterness or in sweetness?
Mm.
So I might have gone better at it.
That's really interesting. I mean, so in some ways it's forced you to develop your taste more.
Yeah.
Would you say that you've been actively trying to train your taste or try and recover your smell through forms of training at all? Or has it just come in kind of practice as you've been working?
Both. So I'm still doing all the work I was used to do. I'm roasting the samples because many people ask me, so this is a big disaster. Do you still have your job? What does your boss think? What happened? Well, nothing in this regard changed. Of course, my boss is not happy, but not happy for me. He's not angry or whatever. So I'm doing all the things I can, and in this regard, training. Still, although it's frustrating at times when you're. What I explained, when you're breaking this coffee crust on a cupping bowl, I'm still doing the same procedure, but the aromas I'm getting mainly are coffee. So I can smell that the beverage is coffee, but I can't tell, this is Ethiopian or Kenyan or Brazil. I was pretty confident before the virus hit me that I actually could blindfolded could tell you only by sniffing cupping bowls which origins were on the table. Of course, not when you would put on let's say a Costa Rican and a Nicaragua coffee, because they are also geographically quite close to each other, and so the coffee species are similar, almost similar. But if you would put on African, Asian, and Central American coffees, I could tell you blindfolded which one was which. Only by breaking these crusts. So I've been doing this all this time with not much result. Although recently I could detect, let's say, the difference between Arabica and Robusta, and I could also detect in the aroma that coffee was had a defect, but then in a very severe way. So for me, it was okay. I detected something's wrong in here, and when we were assessing the and actually tasting the coffee with the team, then they were almost very much disgusted all the time on these specific bowls, and I was like, well, yeah, I can taste it. Something's off, and they were like, what? This is very bad. So my baseline is very, very low.
Yeah, so it's almost like that it's become less, in some ways less sensitive, and in some ways less specific or less fine-grained.
Exactly. This is the main thing that's bothering me, of course, still, that I can do a much. I can tell about the taste. I can detect main differences, but I can't tell you about specific delicate nuances in coffee. And for the official coffee grading system, this is not the biggest part, but it is a big part of it. So I'm also curious how I will do, because this certification for a Q grader, as it is called, it runs for 3 years, and every 3 years you have to attend a calibration for a full day, and show that you are still able to grade coffees and assess them in the proper way. So this is for October on my agenda, because I'm gotten an extension. So this will be interesting. And on the other hand, for training, I've gotten in contact with in the Netherlands there are associations for smell and taste when you have a disorder. I've never heard of them before, of course. So a whole new world opened, and I got to know a lot more people. And I've been to a public meeting day. But they advised me to start with aroma training as well. So this is what I've been doing. I must admit, it's not been that strict day to day, also because I was already aware that I'm if you are a professional smeller, taster, then you are already if you're not noticing it, you are all the day you are paying attention to smells in everyday life, in your house, at work, in the outdoors. So it's been a mix of smell training with aroma bottles and just resuming work and doing the things I've been doing before and hoping to improve it.
So do you think that, sort of moving forwards then, do you think that particularly in things like the coffee industry and kind of those who are working with forms of sensory grading like you are, do you think that now and in the future the pandemic is kind of will change the way those industries operate at all? Do you think that there will be some kind of bigger ramifications?
One big thing already changed quite rapidly, and afterwards all tasters agree that it should have happened much earlier and not due to this pandemic. This is the fact that when you have coffees on a cupping table, you usually do, let's say, an average of 10 different coffees. And in each coffee, you taste with 5 different coffee bowls just to sort out any differences. So there will be, on average, 50 bowls on a table. The thing before was that everybody who was attending would put their spoon in one of these bowls and slurp the liquor right out of the spoon. Then it was, of course, recommended to rinse your spoon, also for your tasting procedure, in a bowl of water. But along this process, sometimes this rinsing was forgotten, or, well, the rinsing bowl got a bit diluted. So it was a kind of people from outside this business would say it looks quite dirty what you are doing. You're all putting your spoon in the same bowl and then slurping from this spoon, and all the saliva probably get mixed in. I would say it shouldn't be that big of a problem. I always said I've never been really sick the last 7 years, and especially not due to, I could never relate it to this tasting procedure. But the thing that changed now is that this procedure has an extra step added right after this pedamicitis. So what the tasters now do is they still scoop a little liquor out of a bowl, but then first pour it into a tiny espresso cup or another small vessel, and out of this little vessel they slurp the coffee as they were used to slurp it from the spoon. So their saliva and their mouth will only touch this separate personal little vessel, so the spoon will be fully clean, will not touch any mouth. So this changed, and this is almost like a new strict procedure for worldwide, keep it more clean and safe.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it'll be interesting to see whether we kind of have any further changes down the line. And the final kind of question I had was, you know, I mean, you may only have a limited sense of this, but do you think that at all that there's been any change in people's taste for coffee over the last few years? You know, do you think that people are looking for particular blends now in a way that they weren't before? Has the kind of flavor palette of buyers and consumers changed at all, do you think? That was going to be my final question.
Yeah, I think people are more aware of tastes and flavors nowadays, because there's also a big array of coffees. There are a lot of new coffee roasters, the little ones, big ones. There are a lot of new procedures in coffee origins, trying to create new flavors by assessing other, trying to create other flavors by changing, let's say, the so-called fermentation after the coffee cherries are picked. Even yeasts could be added in this fermentation procedure, and they will try to manipulate and create new flavors by, let's say, trying to do anaerobic processing, creating more wild fruity flavors or specific spicy flavors in the most natural way. So this is not for the whole coffee world, and not all coffee producers are capable of doing this, but there are a lot more coffee roasters offering specific types of beans and fermentation processes. So yeah, definitely. And I would say that in general, after this already during this pandemic, that people that are experiencing smell loss are gotten aware that it's a huge, very important sense. I was thinking it's probably, smell would probably be the most important if I would think all the others through. Yesterday I read an article from a taster collie, and she got had a question. What would be the your most valuable sense if you would have to choose one? This is a very common question, and she answered my touch. So I'm not sure about this, because touch, you can touch, let's say, a mashed fruit, but they will all kind of feel the same. But you can't really detect differences in coffee or in other foods or beverages unless you can detect these very delicate aromas. And even if you would be, let's say, lying in a quiet room with your eyes closed, with your arms, everything in rest, then the only thing that would always be active, maybe in a more relaxed state, but it will always be active, is your smell. This is the first thing that will give you a clue about, let's say, a fire or a nice smell coming from the kitchen downstairs or from the outdoors when your windows open. And it's not about sound, not about touch, not about taste, not about sight. So I would say, I hope, I expect people would be much, much more aware of their sense of smell, even more than, let's say, taste, because I'm a bit, I would say it's a bit fuzzy that we have two separate senses for smell and taste, because they are that much interconnected. And well, smell, of course, almost overwhelms the taste for a large part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully people will pay more attention to smell, and to a certain extent, more attention to taste as a result of the pandemic. And I mean, thank you so much for doing this interview, Norman. It's been really absolutely fascinating. I hope that, your smell in particular, I know that your taste has been sort of better, but hopefully your smell will gradually recover as well and be kind of back to as normal, hopefully soon.
Yeah, I have my hopes on the vaccine, which could do some magic in almost 30% of the cases. People could get better, sort of better. So I've heard about somebody who got her sense of smell magically back. But this is, of course, nothing I can. It's a small chance, and then still, when people lost their sense of smell and they are not professionally using it, I would say, I can't prove it, but I would say that most people would be quite happy when they already, smell most of the things they could before. And then still the question remains, how good were you actually as a taster or smeller before? So for me, it's I once described it as a baseball pitch. So when you have these bases, the four bases, I'm still aiming for home base. But the last stretch for me is a stretch that almost nobody, which is not using their senses professionally, is aiming for, because this is the things that would show me the delicate aromas and the tiny specific things in food and beverages. So this is where I'm aiming for, and this is where I'm still heading for. It's gotten better, and my taste is pretty good, and the phantosmia I've had for some weeks is gone, and parosmia is almost gone. So I'm going for it, but it will take a while to be noted.
Well, fingers crossed, and thank you again.